While the invisible hand has steered the national economy into the shitter, and the adventures of Joe the Plumber have become a more pressing concern than the avarice of Thomas the Investment Banker, an altogether different man named Bat the Partially Employed Radio Host has attempted to seek a secondary means of employment in these tough, tough times.
Mr. Segundo, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule.
It's not that busy.
We appreciate your willingness to meet with us under these pressing economic circumstances.
Let's just cut to the chase. Can I have a job? I'll be happy to go down on you if it will get me a little pocket money.
Well, I'm afraid this is where things get a little complicated.
Yes or no? My schedule is not that busy. And there's the Motel 6 manager who keeps knocking on my door. I think he wants something.
Mr. Segundo, you are 50 years old.
What's that got to do with it?
Well, we're looking for someone a little younger. Some naive little thing fresh out of college whom we can pay an obscenely small amount of money.
I assure you, I'm quite naive. At least that's what my ex-wife tells me.
We're also looking for someone pale.
Yes, I'm sorry about the tan. It came with the booth. Look, I'll be happy to stay inside for the next 6 months.
Mr. Segundo, we're looking for a gentleman. A pale young gentleman.
Isn't that discrimination?
You're going to complain about discrimination in this economic climate?
Okay, so I am here with Michael Reisenhower, not to be confused with Eisenhower, who is the man, one of the men, behind Pale Young Gentleman. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing nicely, yeah.
Now, your band is called Pale Young Gentleman, yet I have observed that there are, in fact, two women in your band as well.
There are.
Why, is it a collective noun situation, or what
well,
happened here?
Well, it started out as just three guys, okay. You know. We were never describing ourselves, really, when we came up with the band name, so it seemed all right when we started adding
Is there
females.
A specific reason for the name at all? Or
not really. It's just a character in the beginning of Great Expectations.
Yes. Got it.
I don't know. It just rang a bell with me for some reason, so we just stuck with it.
Okay. Well, I wanted to first of all ask a sort of obvious question about how you go about arranging a song. I mean, with Golden Face Morning Light, you have the guitar work limited to strumming and a couple of arpeggios.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you arrange so that the entire band gets a chance to play, that nobody gets left out. I mean, how does that work out?
Well, it starts out with me just playing guitar and just finding like a vocal and guitar arrangement that is compelling enough. And then I'll just write for the band, you know, try to get everybody incorporated like on that one, and just try to write something that kind of suits the content of the song, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, do you work a lot of it out through rehearsing? How does that work?
I actually write most of it all out.
So it's arranged all in advance?
Yeah. And then we'll, I'll give them the music and then we'll play through it, and then little things will change, and then I'll go home and mess with some stuff. And
so you're a perfectionist then?
Well, maybe so, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe
I mean,
so. About certain things, I guess. Yeah.
What percentage would you say changes over the course of a song before it actually gets laid down?
Oh.
I mean, how much is determined by, say, you know, someone improvising, or say, your brother Matt having an idea on the percussion, or what?
Yeah, I'd say percentage of what'll change. Like, we'll actually write through entire songs and entire arrangements and then cast them away and start over, you know?
Really? Okay.
And that happened a lot with this album. As the songs started fitting together, certain things didn't work at all anymore, didn't work for the mood of the entire album anymore, so we had to change the arrangement so it fit better. Drums actually are one of the things that I have absolutely no knowledge about, really. You know,
so you
I can't
Matt,
play
right?
them, and so he'll play things, and I'll give him feedback, and he'll do things, and I'll, you know, don't do that anymore, that's bad, or, oh, that's great, do that again, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I'm curious, I mean, do you have any input on the specific sounds, or is that all Matthew? I note that, for example, there's that sound during, of course, the, you know, Crooked Arm, where you have something that sounds between a cowbell and a gas station
bell. I can tell you what that is. I was actually just recording that. I was having trouble with that song, and so I decided I'd just demo it in my apartment on an 8-track, you know. Uh-huh. And so I just had the guitar line, and I was just messing around, and I was had it at a table, and at the table was a Pottery Barn kind of like fruit bowl.
Yeah.
And so I just took the end of a handle of a scissors and banged on the inside of
really?
It. And so we recorded we used that on the record too. We brought that bowl into the studio. And
it was that bowl. Did you try any other bowls out?
Scissors. No, I just it was the perfect sound right away.
It was so. One bowl and it worked out.
Yeah. So we didn't mess with it at all.
Are there any other percussive scenarios like that where you bang on something and it just turned out to be just that particular one? It's a divine act of serendipity.
Yeah, no. Nothing like that on the album. We tried other various things like Matt had an idea for a song using a wrench, a ratchet wrench, and just like going like that, you know, that kind of stuff. But it didn't end up fitting very well for the album, I guess. So.
I should note that in our history, there are some interesting lyrics from you. When you say, "My brother found my body in the grass, a purple stain, and he didn't say a word, we are the same, we are the same." This made me very concerned about the relationship you have with your brother. I mean, have there been bodies found? Are you busy essentially ignoring troubled purple stains? I mean, is there a bruise in some situation?
That was
all metaphorical? Is this not you? Is it somebody else?
Yeah, no, that's just kind of a dramatized version of... a relationship not working out,
okay,
and then kind of rediscovering your family, or them rediscovering you, or being there when you needed them to be there.
Okay.
So that's what that specific lyric is about, I guess.
Yeah. I understood that particular thing, but I'm wondering if it spawned from some direct personal anecdote.
No, there was.
How much of a method approach did you take with the lyrics to this song?
There's nothing. It came out of my mouth once when I was singing. So.
Yeah, but your brother happened to just enter into it.
Yeah, right.
He just seemed to be the logical place to go after your father.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
We did see someone get hit by a car a couple days ago. That was surprising.
Well, your brother?
No. Well, we were sitting outside of Kinko's.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know where we were, but all of a sudden there was a thud, and then we looked around over our shoulders, and there was somebody that was had been hit by a car.
Somebody else,
yeah.
Okay, I think it was your brother
none of
there
us.
For a bit.
No,
okay,
but
then
you just reminded me of that.
Story,
yeah. He went and called 911 and all that
stuff. So you're a soothsayer with your lyrics, right, then?
Maybe so.
I mean, do you see visions when you compose a song or compose a particular...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they come true, but I've got things that I think of, obviously, you know.
Okay. Well, have any come true? Are you keeping track? Are you keeping a log?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of.
I wanted to ask you about Bo Sorensen. I know he did some background engineering for Death Cab and Garbage. I'm wondering, did you select him, or did he kind of come with the Science for Sound deal? And I'm also curious how you got hooked up with Science for Sound as well. I mean, how did Bo Sorensen enter the equation? I mean, how much say have they given you to... Why didn't you, for example, produce instead of, you know, Bo?
Bo, well, actually, when we made the first album with Bo on our own.
Oh, okay.
We talked over the months about wanting to make the next album together, and I knew we were going to make it with him before I knew that Science of Sound was going to be in the picture. And when I told them about that, told them about making the album at Smart Studios again, they were on board with it.
I think there was less than a year between recording sessions between the first album and the second album. How did things come so fast for this?
I was able to take time off work. I just kind of wrote songs and worked on arrangements and music, like kind of a 9-to-5 thing.
Uh-huh.
So that sped it up a lot.
Yeah.
And then we demoed the album. Science of Sound has their own studio.
Yeah.
And so we spent a week and just kind of recorded what we had, any random ideas we wanted to put, so we had an idea of what the entire body of work looked like at the time, and then used that to make the decisions for the final album. So.
What is your day job, or this, you know, other job that you have?
Well,
I mean, this could be your day job,
right,
too, or your night job. I
right
mean,
now it's
job
my
number
day
one
job.
Or job number two. What is your alternative form of living
well,
here?
Well, I've worked in coffee shops for a long time, so that's it, pretty much.
Okay. And you're sort of in a kind of part-time situation with a coffee shop?
Well, right now I'm in a no-time situation with the coffee shop.
So there you have a situation with them where you are on call, or like, hey, I'm available, I'm in town for 3 months. And then
Right. Like, when I get back, though, you know, if I want a job back, I can have it, kind of that kind of situation. But
What's the situation with the band? I know that there have been some lineup changes in the last, since the first album, the second album.
Yeah, quite a bit, yeah.
You have a new bass player. You have more string players.
Right.
And I'm since it was so fast between the two albums, I was wondering, did the change in lineup influence the songwriting? What happened here?
Yeah, well, right after we made the first album, I knew that I wanted to get another string player in the band. So we put an ad up around like the campus there at UW-Madison, to which a few people responded, and we kind of let everybody that respond in the band. So then we had a full string quartet, and then I started writing for that, you know what I mean? So that's that kind of, it did inform a lot of decisions for how the album was going to sound.
But you have a more stringy musical sound to this album that is not there in the first album, which is more cabaret-based.
Right.
And
yeah.
I know in other interviews you have expressed certain reservations about cabaret. I mean, what happened here? I mean, why didn't you get it right the first time?
Well, the first time was really kind of accidental. It was just me writing songs on piano, and we'd go play shows in Madison and drink beer and that kind of thing, you know. And I was fairly studious, or tried to be studious about songwriting and rhyme schemes and all this kind of thing. But I kind of wanted to be more so. And the first album was just some songs that we had been playing live enough that fit together. We're all in the same place. And so we recorded it because I knew that we were going to be doing something different. So I was like, well, we have to record now because we're already working on new stuff that's different than this. You know what I mean? So the first album, the cabaret thing, I felt like that whatever that mode was easy to not take seriously. Mm. And so I thought that wouldn't work for the ideas that I was trying to put across for the next album at all.
You know, but should music be taken completely seriously? I mean, I've seen you folks play, and you all go up there and you're so serious. I mean, you're one of the most serious like indie bands I think I've ever seen. I mean, not a single, I mean, maybe a slight joke. Okay.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, a slight joke about parking the van, but right. I mean, that you guys are really serious. I mean, I'm wondering if there's a certain danger in taking things perhaps too seriously, or whether that might not loosen things up enough to get a kind of a visceral feel for the music.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I mean, that's possible. It's just where I was when I wrote this album. It was, I just had certain things I wanted to say and tried to find a way to say it and you know, being really goofy and quirky and that kind of thing cheapened it too much. You know what I mean?
Cheapened? How so?
I guess it made me laugh at myself or something like that. Like it was embarrassing or something like that.
Huh. So you're a self-conscious songwriter then, more so perhaps than another band member or
not self-conscious, but I think that with the last album I found myself in a place that was unnatural for me like anymore, you know what I mean? Like maybe when I was 21, some of those songs I wrote when I was 19, you know what I mean? So there are certain things I think about writing lyrics and delivering ideas that just seems jokey to me when it gets, I guess, cabaret-y or something like that, you know what I mean?
You had mentioned that many of the arrangements you started from ground up all over again while you were recording this album, and I know that it was recorded and mixed in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
How did you manage to I mean, I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, was it a sort of 2 week situation because, oh well, we have X amount of money and as a result we can't quite fit everything in, or what?
Yeah, well, it was, we have X amount of money and everything was pretty much figured out before we went into the studio. It was almost like the studio was the big show and we were doing a dress rehearsal in the weeks before with just making sure everything sounded good and the arrangements were working together. Mm-hmm. And then we just went and tried to actually perform it with microphones on us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was not a lot of time for as much recording as we did, but Bo did a fantastic job, I think, and we were able to get in under a budget that I promised, which was good.
Well, I mean, you have 7 members, and I know that you tour with 5. What did you do to reconfigure things so that you can perform these songs live? I mean, did you have to tinker around with things? Is there something being lost or something being gained in the live performance that's not there in the recording and vice versa?
Yeah, I mean, there's something being lost and gained. You can do a lot more over-the-top stuff in a live situation than in a recording. And so there are pop music devices and things that I tried to keep out of the first record that we go to when we're playing it now, because people can't really hear the lyrics at all, so in order for people to like get impacted oftentimes in that short amount of time when the sound isn't that great, you know, you have to make some changes, obviously.
And yeah.
So it was pretty natural, actually, how we moved with a lot of the stuff. We just kind of made some of the drums more dancey and that kind of thing, you know.
Do you worry, though, about audience perception if you are concerned about being taken seriously as opposed to something that it reflects a 19-year-old self?
No, I'm not worried about that. A live show and a recording, to me, are two totally different things. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's enough room to move that, to mess around with that. You know.
I also wanted to ask you about your vocals. I mean, there's certainly a Ray Davies inspiration, I think, with the falsettos and the kind of warbling effect that you sometimes do. And yet there's some songs in which you're very specific about the falsettos and others where you deliberately sort of slur a word where wood becomes world and the like. And I wanted to ask you how much you... I mean, have you sit there and have you actually... listen to recordings of your voice? I mean, to what degree have you done this and paid attention to how you were singing and how you were warbling and how you were falsettoing and the like?
Yeah, I mean, I pay a fair amount of attention to it. It isn't like a big budget mainstream radio where they go through each phrase,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Not like that at all, but for me, we'll test it a couple times and... whatever way suits the song best is the one we keep, you know. As far as Ray Davies, it's funny, since the beginning I've been getting like Kinks comparisons every once in a while. I actually don't listen to any Kinks. I've never really been, you know, my dad didn't listen to the Kinks, he listened to the Rolling Stones, you know what I mean? So that's always interesting to me. I can see it, I guess, when I listen to Kinks now, you know what I mean? And talking about maybe some of the word mashups, a lot of that's just kind of keeping my mouth lazy, you know what I mean? And there's some syllables and vowel sounds, I guess, that I sang in choirs a lot when I was in middle and high school, and there are ways that you sing as a group so that your vowels all sound the same and so they're more musical sounding, which I think I just held on to, that I still do that, you know.
I wonder if you sing the way you do because it's this antidote to the auto-tuning scenario that you see with a lot of these big band artists. I mean, I like listening to a lot of bands in which you can actually... okay, it may not be perfect, but it's certainly true in terms of the emotions. And I really feel that this auto-tune scenario is just... it's driving me nuts. I mean, it's like it's actually making its way into the indie world, too.
Right.
Have there been any considerations along these lines? I mean, how much do you sweeten your voice? How much do you apply reverb to it? I mean,
as far as like reverb and things, that's Bo usually makes that decision. We try to keep it all minimal, you know, try to not treat the vocals very much and try to leave as much of the human character in there as possible, you know, which I think is maybe where your frustration is. It sounds like a robot could be singing the song.
There's a very funny YouTube video of Billy Joel singing at the Super Bowl, and it's very clear that he's on auto-tune, and he's like, it's terrible. It sounds worse than any kind of natural human flaw. How do you go about coming up with a set list? I mean, is there any consideration for that? I mean, do you mix up your set list? Does it become routine after, say, like 10 dates or whatnot?
No, I would have thought we would have had more of a routine than we do, but... it's been changing a lot, and a lot of it is just me changing stuff when we're up there, just because we haven't played in front of any audience before, you know, so just try to feed the audience and read them. You know what I mean? So.
Oh, I also wanted to ask you about Brett, who's your new bass player. I mean, why did he make the cut? What was the quality there? I mean, how many people did you audition for this?
He played guitar on the first record, so.
Oh, really? Oh.
So he just slid right into the bass spot and played bass.
Who is Jackie, who you dedicated?
Jackie's my wife.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's the one that worked while I took time off to work on an album. So.
Okay. She's okay with that then?
Yeah. So far, yeah.
Okay. I mean, are you actively trying to pursue a bigger label by going on this crazy tour? Or I mean, is it about recognition?
Really,
or are you
looking,
happy with your current?
We're not looking for. I mean, we're looking for everything and nothing, I guess. You know, we're just trying to sell some CDs and you know, find some new audiences. And if a bigger label swooped in for some reason, that'd be an interesting situation. But I wouldn't be counting on that or anything like that, you know.
But I mean, I'm also curious how much you have to be on the road and how much you have to be performing in order to really make this worthwhile. Or is it the music itself that is worthwhile?
Yeah, you know, I'll say that one of my, I mean, that's an interesting question. It's a bit of both, you know what I mean? I would love to be able to support myself playing music, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a situation that a lot of bands are in these days, you know. It's like this, there's this whole haziness about being a band anymore and touring and with gas prices, and it's just everything's topsy-turvy, you know.
Well,
so.
And not only that, but you also have five people in the band who you need to have to play, as opposed to a lot of people essentially have three. It's like the equivalent of, well, if you're a fringe theatrical performer, well, if you're a solo show, you could actually essentially support yourself a little bit. But the money's not big in this, and you've got five people, and you're trying to do something different.
It pairs it down.
How long can you keep on doing this if there's not a lot of money, and it could be a losing proposition for all?
Yeah, I have no idea. That's a question that I don't know. You know, I certainly have interest in going out there and still trying to hit it and see what we can drum up. You know, but I have no idea.
Is it more about getting people in to see your shows or selling CDs?
It's both. Oh, that's a weird thing. I mean, if you, from a strictly financial side of it or business end of it, we don't get any money for the CDs, but we owe money, and the label gets money for the CDs, and we get money for the road, you know, from the door. So I guess it's kind of a 50-50 thing, you know.
Did the company actually set up the publicist, or
we have a publicist. Okay. Yeah.
Was that from Sound or what?
Was that
from Science for Sound?
Yeah, or? Science for Sound. Yeah, they set up a publicist who's out of Jersey City, actually.
Yeah, I mean, how much do you have to rely on word of mouth as opposed to this kind of publicist who's? I mean, because I found out about the show at the last minute when you first played in New York.
Yeah.
And when I came up to you, I said, what happened? I found out about this a couple of days ago, and that was only because of curiosity and word of mouth. I mean, to what degree does a band, any band, you or whoever else, have to rely on word of mouth and the internet and the music blogs and all that?
It's huge, I think. I mean, you have to rely almost our whole first album relied solely on the internet.
Yeah.
We didn't tour on it.
Yeah.
People somehow heard about it, you know, and I don't know, it's everybody's trying to make noise right now, you know, and there's a lot of it, and word of mouth I think is still the only real good way to do it, you know what I mean? People trust their friends before they trust a website, you know.
Yeah.
Unless you're a weird website reader, which I am sometimes, you know.
Do you think you would have made more of an impact had you toured for that first album?
Yeah, of course I do. It wasn't really feasible to us at the time. It didn't even seem like a realistic thing. You know what I mean? We just recorded an album so we could get some more shows around town, and my brother just started sending them out, and we got a really good response from it. And so we made another one and we're touring on it, you know.
How many CDs did you send out for the first time?
I have no idea. A few hundred, probably.
Really? Do you essentially inure yourself from the business end that Matthew handles? Just so, because you want to worry about playing the music and writing the music and keeping the this music writing machine going, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been any real like conscious decision to do so, but he certainly does a lot of work for the band, and I mean more than I do. I think even writing songs. I think it's a good situation for me, and he does a lot of work.
How did he actually get into the band? Was it just this sort of started out this way? Your brother was playing drums, and then your brother was
he wasn't even playing drums. He put. The story goes, I would write songs on piano, and then Brett, who plays bass now, was a friend of mine, and he just came over and started playing guitar for a couple weeks, and then my brother just started banging on some stuff, and then we went and bought a really cheap drum set, and that's it, yeah, and then we just kind of kept growing a little bit, you know.
But I'm wondering, at what point did you hand over the business handling over to your brother? I mean, was that just a situation that he kind of took charge of?
He just took charge of it, yeah. There was no no handing over of anything. I mean, he's the only one that I think would have done anything. I would have just, you know, kept playing the songs, I think, you know, so.
Do you fight with your brother at all?
Oh, yeah.
Is he a trusty guy?
He's definitely a trusty guy. Well, we do sibling stuff, you know, but it's all stupid stuff, you know, that you only fight with them because you can, because you know them well enough to be able to say stuff you wouldn't say to other people, you know.
Well, Michael, thanks so much for taking the time. It was a pleasure chatting.
Yeah, all right. Thank you.
Thanks.
I say the night's been dark and polite, but I'm wondering, will you ask me in? I pause, do you gaze at my flaws? Do I wander back home, empty the night alone? What a marvelous desire.